Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Before we start today's podcast, a quick heads up on Sheerluxe's VIP Club. From restaurants, bars and hotels to beauty, wellness and shopping, Sheerluxe partners with some of London's best destinations and hottest brands to bring its VIPs exclusive monthly offers. So why not sign up? It'll cost you just £5 a month or £50 for the year. Use your card once or twice and you'll have made that amount back in no time. For more information, visit sheerluxevip.com.
Welcome to the Sheerluxe Highlights podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, I'm joined by Heather Steele, Astrid Carter, and very special guest, Elizabeth Payton, who is the European Styles correspondent at the New York Times. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Lovely to have you. Well, I just want to warn you, there's a little bit of construction work going on just behind us. So if you do hear some unsolicited banging throughout the podcast, we apologise. And we're really hoping it'll be over by next week, but it shouldn't be too bad. So Elizabeth, we always start by talking about books and TV and film. So what has everybody been watching this week?
Well, I started watching the Netflix show that everyone's talking about, You. I actually missed the beginning, which I think is quite crucial, quite a lot. But I felt like it was quite like a cheesy American approach to that kind of thriller show.
Yes.
So I felt like I could kind of get back on board with it quite easy.
So how many have you watched?
About three.
Okay. Have you guys seen it?
I haven't. I have to confess. I've seen a lot of the press around it. And obviously remember Penn Badgley from his Gossip Girl days.
Right.
Is that the main guy?
Yeah.
See, I never watched Gossip Girl. So.
How did you never watch Gossip Girl?
I tried to and I thought it was absolutely dire.
Yeah, shit. So. But you need to go back and watch it.
Okay. I feel like I'm a little bit old now.
Maybe. No, you're not. It is so good. And I feel like if you're of our generation, then you can watch it at any time.
Okay.
So You is about a guy who works in a bookstore in New York and gets really obsessed with a girl who walks in one day and like just takes stalker to a whole new level, uses social media to kind of completely manipulate her and the people around her. But when he's like with her and kind of in inverted commas acting normal, he slips straight into Dan from Gossip Girl.
That's
and it's really hard to remove the two.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. He's very much playing a similar role, a more sinister one, but maybe he was just acting like himself in both.
Maybe he's just creepy in real life.
Do you feel like it's glamorizing stalking? I mean, that's been the criticism, right? That it's so polished in Hollywood, and actually is that a positive thing? I haven't watched it.
Yeah, so. No, because he tweeted this week being like, I don't understand why people are saying that they're sympathetic towards this character. Like, you should not be. You've got this wrong if you are. He is fucking psycho. No. Like, so scary.
Even though it's got that kind of, like, slightly cheesy gloss over it.
Yeah.
No, he's got it, the kind of serial killer thing down to a T.
Yeah. Mm. So I actually really wasn't enjoying it for the first four. I thought it was, like, part Americanized, but also part super creepy, and I really didn't like that mix. But I now kind of want to know what happens next.
But also, you know when she's in the room that he keeps his first editions
yes.
in? Like, I don't know how long she was in there for, but her hair was, like, totally perfect.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's got that kind of gloss over it, which I guess could be glamorizing.
I want to cut my hair like hers. I think she has great hair.
Yeah, she does have great hair.
Elizabeth, watching anything good at the moment?
Well, a neat segue from serial killers, but the Luther series, the latest Luther series.
I don't want to talk about it. No.
It is so disappointing.
Oh.
I am crushed. So I remember that first season that must have been like 9 or 10 years ago now and thinking it was some of the best television I'd seen in ages. I love a thriller. I love Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm. Don't we all?
And this last season, it was just so lame. It just descended into farce, right? And that's kind of what makes a real thriller so scary when you can imagine this. So the first two episodes were pretty good. You guys will never travel on a night bus alone again on the other
deck. That scene was horrible. Horrible,
right?
Horrible.
But again, because it's anchored in reality, you know that could be you.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, you know, that
hopefully
you can
not,
position yourself in that
so,
way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then the last two episodes just got completely ridiculous.
Oh, shame.
I know, it's really disappointing.
Because she's amazing, Ruth Wilson as well.
Yeah.
Like, I love her. Is she in previous seasons?
Or just... she's his sort of nemesis and weakness,
oh, interesting.
I'd say.
Okay, so how many seasons are there until this point?
I think this is the fifth.
I was going to say five, yeah.
And there has been like a 5-year hiatus or something because he's obviously been off in Hollywood becoming a superstar.
Naturally.
But yeah, I was really sad. I was all set that horrible first week of January where you're feeling really depressed and started with such high hopes and fell a bit flat.
that. Is it finished?
Finished.
Only 4 episodes?
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people on Instagram on their stories saying, like, oh, I'm under the covers, like, too scared to watch it kind of thing. Did you find it was like that?
No, I watched it all on my own and I kind of binged it over a weekend the week it had been shown, kind of consecutive nights. But no, I wasn't scared at all. Like we were saying, I suppose we would have been in previous series, mm-hmm. but no, it's just a bit far-fetched. And also there's, you know, a certain ending, and some people are saying it's the last episode, and I really hope it is now. Like, I don't think they should make another one. And there's rumours of a film, I'm like, no.
No, it's such a shame when there's an amazing series, and off the back of that popularity, they just kind of take it
they
one
don't know
series
when to stop.
Too far.
Yeah.
What is it actually about? What does he play?
Luther is a troubled, brooding detective. He's possibly the best detective London has ever seen, but unfortunately he has these key flaws in his personality, in his behaviour, and this sort of Achilles heel in the form of a complete sociopath and psychopath.
Oh, so she's the villain?
Yes.
Okay.
But acquaintance as well as the series kind of go on. But there are other villains as well that always kind of come into play to keep the series interesting.
I would go back on Netflix and I would watch the first season. Yeah. I challenge anyone not to come away from that thinking, amazing TV, amazing acting, amazing storylines, but don't bother with the fifth season.
They all taper out, don't they? Nothing ever ends on a high. It's such a shame. Speaking of sequels, I never binge anything, but I watched the whole second series of Friends from College this weekend. It dropped on Friday. There's only 8 episodes and they're like half an hour long, so it's not quite as bingy as it sounds, but it's so good and it's so under the radar. Like, I put on Instagram a few times because Sam, one of the main characters, has the most unbelievable wardrobe that you've ever seen on TV, and I think we were trying to explain it to someone the other day, weren't we, because it's not like a feature. She just happens to have this incredible wardrobe.
Yeah, she's not like the fashionista. She doesn't work. She's an
interior designer. Yeah,
but yeah, she'll just like rock out with like a Valentino cape on.
Yeah, in one episode she was wearing the Burberry trench when it was like semi-transparent one. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
like,
plastic.
She's just got incredible stuff. And a few times I put her outfits on Instagram stories. I got so many messages from people being like, "What series is this? What is?" I feel like people don't know about it, and it is so good. If you're looking for something that's like quite real, but also, you know, no thrillery, scary, murdery things going on, but also this season was way funnier than the first as
really?
Yeah, it's quite laugh out loud funny. I just really recommend
it. Do you feel
it.
Like there's room for another series?
Yes, definitely.
So excited, I'm going to watch it this week.
Definitely. So good. Anything else to add?
I watched The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the Coen Brothers film that came on to Netflix just before Christmas. I finally watched that. That's really worth a watch.
Oh, yeah.
It's serious. I mean, I don't know. It depends if you like that kind of slow film and people getting killed and it not being very cheery.
Okay. But so what's it actually about?
So it's set in like Western times in America, but it's actually kind of 6 separate stories that are all inspired by this fictional kind of old book with different stories about cowboys, etc. But it's just interesting because, yeah, the Coen brothers usually do these kind of longer films, and this is Netflix only, so you can only watch it there. It's just got a really good cast. So it's got Liam Neeson in, it's got James Franco, Tom Waits, who's amazing as a really old sort of gold digger in the traditional sense, and Zoe Kazan as well plays an incredible role for about 20 minutes in her part. So it's about 2 hours and 10 minutes, I'd say, but it feels a lot shorter because it's all these sort of stories that are in no way related, but it's just really beautifully shot, very funny when it shouldn't be, kind of classic Coen brothers. So yeah.
Cool. And did it
what?
Was it only released on Netflix?
Yes, Netflix only. Cool. Yeah.
I feel like they're really killing it because obviously there's that Roma, which I haven't seen.
Oh.
I really need to see it.
It's on my to-do list, but everybody has said that it's absolutely stunning and kind of heartbreaking.
So I know. I feel like I need to gear myself up for it, but it looks so good.
But that's the thing, isn't it? I think at the moment Netflix is just firing out series after series, feature after feature, and it's really interesting at the moment to look at the relationship between Hollywood, old guard Hollywood, and Netflix, Amazon Prime, and seeing what things go. Because I have to say, though, I've been quite disappointed by a lot of the Netflix original series that have come out.
Mm-hmm.
And at what level do they sort of stay with getting really, really good quality things out versus, say, really broadening out and doing a lot of 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10?
But really interesting that the Coen brothers are on board with Netflix, because I mean, I just don't feel like they would put their name to anything bad.
But then
it doesn't mean it's all crap.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff in there too.
But there is also, like, so many of the things that I've seen as series from them, I've now annoyingly forgotten the name. It had Michelle Dockery in it. It was a Wild West show. It was amazing. The first 2 episodes, though, were amazing. And actually, I came away from this, like, 7-episode series just thinking to myself, this should have been a 90-minute feature film. This shouldn't have been 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah.
And I guess it's something they're kind of working through at the moment.
Before we move on, we must just talk about Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh my god, have you guys seen it?
I've not seen it. I was going to see it. I saw the trailer and then the reviews were so consistently awful that I didn't do it. And then look, it's getting a slew of award nominations. It's Affleck. So have you seen it?
Exactly the same as me. When it came out, the reviews were terrible, so didn't go see it. Then I saw that it was still on at the cinema last week, so I went, and oh my god, I'm so happy I did, because it is amazing. It's such a kind of feel good. Well, obviously there's like sadness to it as well because of the whole story, but Charlotte, what did you think?
I saw it this weekend. Exactly the same. The reviews are crap, but so often films that are critically acclaimed are not the ones that like make you feel, because they're judging it on different things, and it's just so feel good and uplifting. Don't go if you don't like Queen music.
There always has been a snobbery and a snobbiness about Queen music,
and they really play on that. So obviously it's telling the story of different moments in their life, and one is when Bohemian Rhapsody came out, and they use clippings of real reviews showing how badly it was received. It was completely panned when they released that album because it's just so odd, and they were like a mix of so many genres and it's just so bad, but obviously they're not highbrow. It's just so good.
They don't like pretend that any one of them were like a cool rock and roll star at all, because they weren't. They were like essentially like a bunch of geeks plus Freddie Mercury. And it's quite sweet and like charming to see that side of it, and it just kind of shows that he, I mean, they were all incredibly talented, but he was like something special and really was like the superstar.
Rami Malek, who plays him, having also seen A Star Is Born, I cannot even begin to understand why people think that Bradley Cooper deserves awards over Rami Malek, because like, I'm not an actress, but I feel like it's probably not that hard to just act really like sad and drunk and depressed. Like, I could probably find that in my soul somewhere, whereas what Rami Malek does to like completely inhabit this person and this larger-than-life character, I mean, so incredibly.
It must be so daunting to get a character like that to play, but he just becomes him, doesn't he? Like, amazing. He definitely deserved it.
So here's a question. I think where a lot of the backlash has come from is the gay community, right? Who say, in fact, I was sitting last week at the London Men's Shows next to Philip Picardi, who's the editor-in-chief of Out, and he said, no, we don't like this movie. It pink-washed the Freddie Mercury story, which is to say, you know, etched out the sort of gay narrative, and they really focus on his relationship with his Mary. Wife. Is that true? Did you come away thinking, hang on, we know that this is a cult gay icon who lived quite a flamboyant lifestyle and we don't see any of that?
It's a 12A. So I think they obviously kind of went for the like populist thing and played that down a little bit, played down all sex and drugs really a little bit in order to kind of make it more accessible to
get a bigger audience.
Wider audience. Exactly. But I think the other criticism that I've heard is not just that it pinkwashes it, but that it's kind of portrayed as like straight good, gay bad, and that, you know, he's on the rails and he's happy and his life is going well when he's in a relationship with Mary, and that then as soon as he kind of heads down the wrong path, that's when it's like, you know, gay orgies and everything. And so it's associating like badness and wrongness with his homosexuality. It's really hard to comment because I don't know about you, Ashley, like obviously it's not something I'm particularly sensitive to, but I think it's mainly comes down to the fact that it's a 12A.
When I was watching it, I didn't feel that. On reflection, I can see why the gay community and I guess fans of his would have maybe been upset by that. But also, this Mary woman was such a big part of his life. When I was 17, I did my first like work experience thing on a TV show. I worked in the wardrobe department, and the costume designer there had previously worked with Queen. Had been very close to Freddie Mercury. She told me that he always had this woman in his life.
In his will, he left 40% of every proceed ever from Bohemian Rhapsody to her. So she's worth something like 100 million and is still living in his home in West London.
And I remember like being 17 and this costume designer telling me this, thinking like, oh, I've got like insider information. But obviously you forget about little things like that. And then when I saw the film, I was like, oh my god, that's the woman she was talking about. So yeah, she was a huge part of his life.
And they go out in real life now, Rami Malek and the girl who played which is the best.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's so nice to watch a film like that, isn't it? And you know that they're together. She is amazing.
I loved all the costumes. Like, she worked in Bieber when they first met, and they go into the Bieber store that was in South Kensington, and I've seen loads of like old pictures from there, and they've literally like redone it to look exactly like the Bieber store. It's definitely worth a watch for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and if you've seen their Live Aid performance, the recreation of it is just, again, it's like pose for pose.
Even the trailer gave me chills.
I said it last week, I'm a real sucker for a film intro, like opening credits, and it's like a big one. You get the kind of chills, you're like, this is gonna be a good 2 hours.
I forgot you said that. It's so true, and it really is a good 2 hours.
Maybe I will watch it this weekend, and then next week we can talk about it.
Exactly.
It could become the
and then
the
Vice is out by the week after.
Oh, yes.
So that's
that looks great.
Did you have anything you wanted to add, film or TV wise?
So one show that I've been loving is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is a show that has been written by the writer of Clueless from back in the day.
And Gilmore Girls.
And Gilmore Girls, exactly. And it is absolutely amazing. It is about a divorced young Jewish housewife on the Upper West Side of New York in the 1950s, who, in the wake of her breakup from her husband, basically realizes she has an amazing talent as a stand-up comedian, which is, of course, totally taboo at the time. There are virtually no female stand-up comics. And it's just amazing. It's incredibly funny, like genuinely laugh out loud. The costumes and the sets are absolutely unreal. And something I was reading about last week is it's actually based on the early life of Joan Rivers, who sort of followed a similar path. And I just think, you know, it's one of those really lovely escapist shows that you can just completely fall into on a dark winter Sunday afternoon and love.
Yeah, I have found it a little hard to get into. I've watched the first two. They're just quite long episodes, which they're nearly an hour, which I know that is not very long. But
50 minutes.
Yeah, I know, a whole 50 minutes. But you know, I feel like I need to persevere because so many people rave about it. She's also the most amazing actress. It's Rachel. I never know.
Brosnahan.
Do you guys watch House of Cards?
Yes.
She was Rachel in House of Cards. Do you remember the girl that got involved with Doug? And she was such a dark, messed up character in
associated the two.
She's this like light, sunny, charismatic character in that. Are you on season two?
I'm halfway through season two and I'm still loving it. So if you like sort of Mad Men costumes and something really hilarious and I guess the Clueless script, have a go.
Okay, perfect. Mm. Heather.
Yes.
I feel like we talked quite a lot on the podcast about your hiatus from social media, but I thought it was time to delve a bit more into it because you wrote a piece for the site last week called What I Learned from a Year Off Social Media. I hadn't quite appreciated that you got rid of everything.
Apart from Twitter.
Yeah. Okay, so talk to me about why you decided to take a year off in the first place.
I'm not 100% sure exactly why. I just remember the one moment. I think it was the period between Christmas and New Year at my parents' in 2017. And where my parents live, it's not where I grew up, so I don't actually know anyone there. So I just kind of found myself like scrolling. And was just like, I'm not seeing anything interesting. I'm not engaging with this whatsoever. But I just kept finding myself reaching for my phones and refreshing. So yeah, I decided to do it for a month, almost like a dry January, but I just really enjoyed it, so I just continued and decided to do it for a year.
So talk about some of the pros and cons. There were quite a lot of good takeaways from it, right?
Yeah, personally, I know it probably isn't for everyone, but I did find there were overwhelmingly more positives than there were negatives. The negatives were probably like birthdays. Like when it was my 30th, I hardly had like anyone message me being like, happy birthday, because unless you kind of work with someone or they're your closest friends or old friends. I mean, I don't know when your birthdays are off the top of my head. So I've had to add it to my calendar. So yeah, it was the same. There's probably lots of people who turned 30 in my general friendship group last year who I didn't say happy birthday to. But that was quite funny. Like, I think I had 10 messages altogether. But it was also interesting who actually messaged me. Like a couple of people, like blokes, I would never know that they would know my birthday. So it was a nice surprise in a way, being like, ah, cool. But other than that, it was just generally positive.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course.
How did you find your concentration levels changed? So for me, that's the biggest thing. My concentration levels are shot at the moment.
So Lizzie, you said you're going to come off Facebook.
Yes, and Facebook, to be honest, isn't the greatest sapper of concentration. Mm-hmm. My reasons for going off Facebook are different. But all that sort of wasted time scrolling and that kind of instinctual checking of something for nothing, did you feel that went away?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I probably slept better because once I get back into my flat, I kind of don't really look at my phone because like my boyfriend's there. I probably message anyone else I would talk to anyway, so I just kind of ignore it, like leave it in my bag until I need to set an alarm for the next day. So general phone usage definitely went down, and in my commutes I definitely read more as well, so I'd kind of arrive in the office feeling a lot more kind of like, oh wow, I've just read this great chapter, rather than sort of being hunched over my phone, just refreshing the whole time. So I don't know if I'm concentrating better, but I probably am.
If/when you go back mm-hmm. onto these social platforms, are you going to go back on all of them or are you going to stay off some?
I'm definitely not going to go back on Facebook. I haven't missed it at all, and hadn't posted anything on it probably since about 2015 anyway. So I've been tagged in photos here and there, usually ones that I wouldn't even want to be tagged in anyway. So generally, no, I don't think I'll be going back on that.
The only people who contact me now on Facebook are like like my mother's cousin from some far removed country. And I think the last year where we've had so many revelations about use of our data, whether it's politically or by brands or by companies, it's just not something I feel comfortable doing anymore. And I just feel like of all the social platforms, you know, we're all journalists here, like Twitter's actually a tool to an extent. We need to be on Instagram, although obviously Heather, you can debate that. But Facebook, I don't think I need to be on it. And I think by the end of this month, I've kind of been like weaning myself off it, to be honest, and realizing I don't miss it.
Yeah.
It's just the bank of photos. That's my only reason to stay on. Like, I know you mentioned that in your feature, Heather.
Yeah, I'm going to go in and like, there's something you can do where you kind of, it'll take ages, but just grab them all off there. Because that's the only thing I care about as well. Like, when I first went to uni, that was when everyone had suddenly got those affordable small digital cameras. Yeah. So everyone would take them on nights out.
And which made you look really good, by the way. I found mine a couple years ago. Yeah. Like, it was like Instafilter, but better.
Definitely, much more flattering. Yeah, so that's like 10 years of really valuable memories and like my gap year and everything. I don't know, that's where everything was kept, so.
All of Generation Z aren't on Facebook, though. They actively resist it. Yeah, you know, they think the idea of having all these personal photographs online is super dangerous. That's why they've all moved towards Snapchat, and which like, I still can't get my head around.
Oh, no.
That's another story. Exactly.
Also, Facebook is so uncurated. As you said, people can just tag you in whatever they like, and like, that is not okay. My angles are not good
enough. After a night out at uni, you'd look on your laptop or you get an email being like, you were tagged in 32 photos, and be like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Like, going on as soon as you could. Like, no.
Or when you were searching for someone and you accidentally put them as your status.
Oh, God.
So many people always do that.
Or like tagging the wrong person in a photo. Yeah. Just too many awful things.
It's a minefield, guys.
Yeah. My friends and I love it on like Time Hop when it comes up with.
That's funny.
We used to write essays on each other's walls, like back when the wall was a thing, and it would be really like quite detailed, private. Yeah. But, you know, like this is what I did when I got home. I don't know, but we were quite open.
Because the messenger thing didn't exist, did it? But when I still had it, Time Hop things, it'd be someone who I don't even speak to, like, what time are you going to lectures tomorrow? I'm going to do this. Like, really long essays about fuck all.
Exactly.
So yeah, I miss looking back at it and laughing at the times I had at uni. But yeah, once I've grabbed those images, I'm out.
You're out. So Instagram, is he?
I'm on Instagram because, you know, I write a lot about fashion and a lot is going on in the industry on the platform. From my own personal point of view, I don't post very much. I mean, I think I post like once a month. I think that maybe twice a month, but I constantly feel like I need to be on it to see what happens. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't break news, you know, Instagram. Twitter is where I feel like I have an edge as a reporter being, and I get to know about news, you know, half an hour before it makes the mainstream press. But I was very late onto Instagram because I had a BlackBerry until they were basically falling apart and losing their entire stock value, because that was what I was given by the Financial Times, which was my old paper. So I was like very late to the day onto Instagram. So I've never kind of completely been as obsessed with it as a lot of my friends and a lot of my kind of work colleagues. Instagram's a bit of a guilty pleasure. I'm not giving it up just yet.
Astrid, addicted?
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm not addicted in the sense of me posting stuff, a bit like you, Elizabeth, but I am on there far too much, and I probably should make more of a conscious effort to come off it. Also, in your piece, Heather, the thing that you said that stuck with me was that when you see your friends, it's much better now because you actually have things to catch up on. I went to a friend's on Saturday night for dinner, and we probably haven't seen each other since like October time. We knew exactly what both of us had done. Like, I'd been on holiday, they'd been away, like, and we just caught up, but we'd already kind of caught up on Instagram.
Yeah, kind of just exchanging, like, oh, you went there, didn't you? Oh, yeah, I did that. Yeah. Rather than actually delving in, like, exactly. What the hell have you been doing?
I feel like it's worse also, like, within our industry as well. Like, we might go and see a PR and they're like, how's this and how's that? And I'm like, I don't know your name. Like, why do you know so much about me? So, yeah, it's quite scary. really, isn't it? Okay, so Heather, in summary, you did say that you had planned to go back to Instagram.
Yes.
In January.
Yes.
You're still in Jan. Is it going
to
happen?
I don't know. I'm in a real pickle. I don't know what to do. I'm quite tempted to, but I don't know. I think when you haven't done something for so long, it's easy to not think about it and not do it. But I think maybe the end of the month, I might dabble back in. That's the thing, you can always just get rid of it again if it's awful.
And as you said, there's quite a lot of pressure if you've been off for a year for that first post back.
Yeah, like that's what I'm scared about. I've got out of the habit of taking photos now, so not of myself, but just in general. So yeah, it does feel like it'd be a statement, which I don't like.
You could really come back with something quite curated, like you're obviously a massive foodie and culture and stuff like that. Maybe just focus it on that rather than
exactly
yourself.
It was never about me. It's usually other people's pets and a few bits of food.
That sounds like great content. Yeah.
We'll see.
Speaking of food, we started a new feature last week called What's in My Ocado Order. Georgie was the first person up. I mean, none of this was a surprise. Obviously, when you work with somebody day in, day out, you kind of know what they like to eat. So it was just really nice seeing it all in a list, a curated list of all the things that Georgie orders. And it's not just for herself, it's for her family as well. Obviously, three young kids and a husband
who loves mackerel.
That sounds delicious, by the way.
Yeah,
I was like, who's he going
to
make that
one? So I was reading this list to Rich and saying, oh, these are really great recipes. And he did make the point that they're more like an assemblyment of ingredients as opposed to recipes. But that's okay because...
Yeah, Georgie said she doesn't cook but
and she's got some really lovely things on her list. So I really recommend listeners go and look at the list. But I also want to know, what are your guys' staples on your online food shop? Do you do an online food shop?
I don't do an online food shop. But basically, I just buy food as and when I need it because I never really know what I'm going to be doing in the week. Like, I always think, oh, I'm not doing anything this week, and then end up maybe being out a couple of nights. And since I've started doing the 5-2 as well, I've basically had to completely be like, these are my meals and that is it kind of thing. So I definitely, don't know, I like food shopping, but I don't do it as much as I used to. But I always make sure I've got lots of coffee and on a... That's basically my only thing.
That's the millennial way, though, right? That's what we're all doing. Like, I'm also the same way. I sort of buy in sort of stages as much as I need, because otherwise you're just throwing all that food away out of the fridge. I guess I do online shopping if I'm having people over. If I'm having a dinner party, I don't have a car. So like the idea of like lugging everything home for 10 people, 12 people, that's when I'll do an online shop. But I kind of like supermarket shopping. That's another one of my... I feel like I'm doing something practical, but I can totally zone out from a quality perspective as well. You can actually look at the produce you're picking up, for example.
Don't get any horrid swaps either.
No, and I just quite like it. I kind of see that as sort of a precious 20 minutes or something that's mine. So my fiancé thinks it's completely deranged. He doesn't understand that at all.
Why, he would rather do it online?
Yeah, he doesn't understand, and he just sort of says in 5 to 10 years nobody's going to be doing supermarket shopping. I'm like, well, for the time being,
I can make the most of it now then.
Exactly. Yeah. Perhaps that's why I'm doing it as well, because I also enjoy wandering shops.
It's just not very cost effective doing it that way, is it? I'm the same. On my way home, when I come out the station, I walk past an M&S, Sainsbury's, Tesco and Waitrose, all on my high street. So there's plenty of choice, but it does mean that you pop in and you have accidentally spent 15 quid just for like, I don't know, some olives and some pasta or something, for like, I don't know, I feel like it's not a cost effective way to...
I know what you mean. I do plan, so it's not like I go in and I just kind of grab lots of tasty things. I know what you're saying.
Astrid, food shops online?
I do like an online food shop, but yeah, it just really depends on what the week's looking like for me. Actually, there's quite a few things on Georgie's list that I always have in the cupboard.
Tell me.
Parma ham. I'm a big Parma ham fan.
In your cupboard? I feel like it's more of a fridge.
I put it in the fridge. Yeah, what else? She always have aubergines. Everyone in the Sherlock's office loves a bit of miso aubergine, don't
you? But I really like how she's explained how she cooks these things as well. So she says she always has fresh aubergines and she eats them roasted at least twice a week with a bit of miso paste and mirin. Like, that is so easy.
Really
handy
nice.
And delicious.
Delicious.
And also, like Georgie, I like to eat rocket out of the bag.
Yes.
As soon as I get home when I'm cooking, you have rocket with pretty much everything.
Yeah, you love rocket.
It's so easy. And I've like eaten half the bag by the time I've served
interesting.
Up.
I actually do that with peas as well. She says she'll eat through a raw bag. I can do that. Like, down him. Heather, would you want to talk a bit about the 5-2? Because that might be really interesting to some people.
Potentially. Basically, the easiest way I found to do it is go to M&S and get one of their balanced for you meals, which there's a certain one which is only 233 calories.
Do tell.
It's chicken courgette and broccoli in like a basil sauce. That's the nicest one and the lowest calorie, which means I can eat way more at lunch, which is a good thing.
Does it take a lot of planning? Have you found it quite logistically challenging.
I think I've just been experimenting with lots of different things, but now I know how I can eat the most on the same amount of calories. Mm-hmm. I kind of, because it's just twice a week, I'm just sticking to the same thing for now, okay. And I'm not getting bored of it yet.
And you've done it for how long so far?
So I started it at the beginning of November.
Okay. And you've seen the effects that you wanted from it?
Yeah, Christmas was like kind of bad,
yeah, it was
in a good way.
Right off for everyone.
So that was kind of like, oh crap, I'm back here again. But no, generally, it's intermittent fasting and it's meant to have other benefits such as improved concentration and more energy, which I do actually feel like
really?
Having, like the longer I'm doing it. And I certainly, like, I'm doing it today and I don't feel hungry at all.
Did you when you started, though?
Yeah, the first couple of times I tried it, I was a bit like, like, it got to half
hungry.
One and I was like, I could really do something to eat. Whereas now I can get to about 3 or half 3 without eating anything.
Oh, my God.
So you don't eat until 3?
Yeah.
Are you hungry?
No, like, weirdly not. So I'll have a coffee at home, a black coffee, because you're allowed unlimited that. So a black coffee at home. And then one when I get in the office, and then I usually have 2, but on a 5-2 day, I'll have 3. So another one at about 11.
Sorry, so you're just completely wired with no food in you. Basically.
Yeah, but I drink loads of water, and then I switch to peppermint tea. So basically,
okay.
Just loads of liquids basically kind of keep me
yeah.
the full sense of fullness.
Is that normal, or do some people eat in the morning and then?
I think some people
kind of like
do that,
evening.
But I think it's better the longer you leave the fast period. So from when you've eaten the day before through to when you next eat, like. The longer you can leave that, the more benefits you'll feel, apparently.
Because the other way of doing it is you can do the fasting thing, can't you, where you just eat only for 8 hours. You have like a 16-hour fast.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like you're doing that anyway, but I think you can have more calories.
Exactly.
But you only eat for 8 hours
yeah,
in a day.
Yeah, I probably could do that, I think, if I didn't have such a long commute. So if I was eating at like 7 o'clock, then it would be
yes.
okay. Whereas I actually eat more like 8:30, 9.
But if you can go through till 3, then you could technically
yeah.
do 1 till 9.
That is true.
Something to think about. I'm quite tempted to try it.
I find it all right, but we'll see.
A good friend of mine, a male friend of mine, lost 2 stone.
Doing what?
Doing 5'2".
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, he wasn't fat. He's just got a big rugby player build. Mm-hmm. And I think he just wanted to slim down a bit and it really worked.
Wow.
I mean, it
really
worked.
Swear by it.
It really
yeah.
does for blokes as well. Well, I think because I've got more to lose, perhaps.
I think it would work better for me as well. Like, I'd find it harder to kind of cut down on everything all
mm-hmm.
the time. I'd rather
That's
just
same.
Have 2 days where
mm-hmm.
I'm like, right, this is what I'm doing. And the thing is, it's like snacking is such an office pastime. And if
yeah.
you train yourself out of that,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, I'm really interested that you're doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, I can have like a soup and then some hippies and then a
yeah,
nice chickeny thing. So now I've found things that are actually quite tasty, but still keep it down. It's
okay.
not, I'm not there dreading it when I wake up on a 5-2 day, knowing, like you say, that I can kind of eat not what I want, but you know, not worry so much
yeah.
on the other days and still lose weight. So
yeah.
yeah,
I feel like you should write a piece about this.
I will.
Yeah.
I think once
when
I get
you've...
to where I feel healthy and good with it,
okay.
and like where I want to be, then yeah, I'll definitely.
Good. I'm excited to hear more, Lizzie. Food. Supermarket staples, anything you've always got in the fridge or the cupboard?
I mean, all of my friends think I am so weird, so I'm almost a bit embarrassed. It's like opening your knicker drawer or something. I always have anchovies.
Nice.
I always have olives and capers, and I always have tinned tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And my view is that basically sounds like a pasta sauce, but
mm.
it can go over anything. So
yeah.
I always put it over, like, for example, I do tender stem broccoli and then tip it all over that. Love tapenade. I basically love extreme flavors, like spicy, sweet,
really
like
salty.
My idea of hell is like a boiled potato.
Yeah,
never
yeah.
eat that, right? So I have a pot of Tabasco sauce and sriracha. I saw somebody had sriracha on their desk outside.
Always, yeah.
That's me.
They're always floating around.
But yeah, those are kind of my basics. But like, the truth is my fridge is just kind of half empty
yeah.
all the time because
mm-hmm.
I'm either out or I'm working. And then if I know that I'm in, I just bring it in and eat it
mm-hmm.
straight away.
I think the key is having like sauces.
yeah.
You know, having things that you can just put on anything to transform them. So like pesto and
yeah.
things that can just add
jazz
flavor.
It up.
Yeah.
Stuff up.
Well, if you want to know about what Georgie has in her avocado shop, then do check out the piece on the site and stay tuned because I suspect we'll be doing a lot more of these. Okay, Lizzie, you mentioned waste in reference to filling your fridge, and that leads us nicely onto our next topic, which is how to reduce your waste this year. We wrote a piece all about different small changes you can make to be a bit more environmentally friendly. I was amused that the first point on this was to switch up your glitter.
Yes.
I did think in terms of what you've got going on this year, that was maybe low on the priority
probably
list.
Shouldn't
but
have been at the top.
But anyway, so on this list were things like spending time on your shopping list, exactly your point,
mm-hmm.
shopping responsibly, ditching disposable cups, and various other things. So I want to know what everybody here does to be a bit more responsible.
I think it's just about making active steps, right? Like, I have every intention in the world, and then it's only when someone really forces my hand that I do it. So, like, last year, the gym that I go to, normally you could buy water for £1 at the desk, and I came in one day, and they were like, oh, it's £3. And you go, they're tiny bottles, by the way. And I just said no, and they said, nope, that's our new policy. And guess what? Every day I now bring my own reusable bottle. Likewise with the plastic bags for your stuff. One day they just disappeared, and they said, oh, you can buy them for £5. And again, that's the right approach, because lo and behold, you have a load of grumpy customers for a week, and then everybody switched their habit. And that's kind of what we need. We need to suddenly be forced to make that choice. I mean, I need to stop giving myself like a pat on the shoulder every time I bring a reusable coffee cup into Starbucks. But that's the kind of basic stuff that we can be doing. Harder for me would be something like reducing my carbon footprint and like not flying anymore and things like that. But yeah, those have been the most recent big steps. I mean, I remember when I was living in New York, I was shocked. You know, people don't recycle in New York. You'd think that that would be a prime city to kind of lead the way and lead the charge on that kind of thing. No, they just don't do it. So you just get so mad. And I'm so used to in London making sure everything's separate, getting it all ready. No, they just said chuck it all in one thing.
Yeah, and is there talks for
to introduce they've got some bigger fish to fry at the moment, I think.
That's just like mind-blowing though, isn't it?
It does depend on your council. Like, I'm in Camden Council and they don't really enforce it at all. Like, my parents are in a different borough and theirs is really like tightly controlled. Like, stuff won't get collected unless it's in its designated place. But in
Camden, you can get a strongly worded letter
exactly,
if you don't put it in the right
or they
bin.
Won't take it away, whereas mine just isn't like that, which is really bad. I feel like councils need to be more responsible.
But I'm also in Camden and I was waiting for the bus the other day and they've started a big campaign. So they had a big sort of sign up at the bus saying 31% of all waste in Camden is food waste, which is insane when you think at the moment that kind of people are queuing up for food banks. It's at an all-time high and yet we're all just chucking away this stuff.
Yeah, that's awful. I didn't know that. I agree. That's good that they are making more of an effort.
They should practice what they preach then.
Damn right. The other place, if you are in Camden Council, is Budgeons in Belsize Park. They've got rid of plastic bags entirely, so they've gone like a step further than the supermarkets and it's only paper bags. I actually saw a thing in Time Out because they had won like an award for saving like 20,000 plastic bags in a month or something like that, and I don't know why more places aren't doing that because it makes a lot of sense. Water bottle queen, you've done very well for last year.
Last year I made a conscious effort not to buy water bottles. Obviously, I'm not gonna lie, I did buy a few here and there, but dramatically reduced my plastic waste just from that. This year, I think I'm going to try and reduce my plastic waste from, you know, when you go to like Tesco and stuff and you can only buy three courgettes when really I just want one.
Yeah.
And I end up buying three because I'm lazy and I don't want to go to the next shop that sells them individually. So that is my New Year's resolution to reducing my plastic waste.
That
sure.
is a good one. I think I've said it on the podcast before, but I've tried to really stop buying fruit and veg from the supermarket because it comes in so much unnecessary plastic. Like, I don't need an avocado in like a plastic cup and a polystyrene cup with a plastic cover.
Yeah.
So trying to hit the greengrocer or the farmer's market, which this piece suggests more often. It's also on the to-do list. But stopping junk mail as well. This is my favourite point.
I liked this one.
This piece.
Yes.
I didn't know that you, I mean, I'm sure if I'd really thought about it, I did know that you could stop your junk mail. But if you go to Recycle for London or the Royal Mail Preference Service, you can actually get all junk mail to your home stopped. And I get them all the time. So
I think
really
I've done that because I don't get any, but I do get like local takeaway things, like ones where they're not actually, you know, bound by anything.
Exactly.
But you do get loads.
Yeah, sometimes they put like four of the same leaflet through. It's like, come on.
And you know what else really annoys me? How like places like banks are still sending paper things to me.
I've got all mine online.
Switch to paperless.
All digital.
Quite hard though, because when you actually need proof of identification, which I had to do a couple of months ago, and they asked for three printed statements, I'm like, no, I've gone paperless months ago.
That's so true.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's a random envelope with your name on it. I promise.
Like a Condé Nast subscription. Like, see, this is my house. Also, plastic free chewing gum. Did you know that chewing gum is made of plastic? I did not. That's disgusting.
I was like, it makes sense.
Yeah. I knew it wasn't biodegradable, but yeah, the reason for that is because there's plastic in it.
It makes sense.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I was saying to Rich earlier, like, the amount of chewing gum I swallowed when I was an idiot teenager at school. Well, just because you'd be, like, chewing gum and the teachers would come over, like, show me your gum or whatever, like, to bollock you, so you'd just swallow it and be like, oh, haven't got any.
I don't think I ever did that.
We got battered.
No,
if we got caught chewing gum.
We weren't allowed
school.
Chewing gum, but I never swallowed it.
No, I don't know why, but I'm just like, it's probably still in there. It's horrible. Genuinely, I think about it like every couple of years, like, what if it's blocking something?
Yeah. Oh, no.
It's dangerous.
Another one is face wipes. I don't use face wipes to wash or clean my face, but I always have them because I think they're really good when you're going to a wedding or out and you're doing like big makeup. I always have them just to like do touch-ups and wipe stuff off my hands, but actually they're so bad you can't flush them down the toilet and you shouldn't recycle them.
Yeah,
so.
I know, I was going to mention face wipes as well because I know you gave them up last year as
I
haven't used them for maybe a year now, but I do really miss them. And I know you were saying before, like, I feel the same, like, with cotton
That's
pads
what I was about
and makeup
to say.
And maybe, like, but then how many of those have we used?
I use, like, maybe five cotton wool pads a night, five or six, to, like, get everything off. And that's a lot. That's really bad.
And you can't recycle that.
No, and I tried with those cloths. It's not the same.
You have to double cleanse.
Mm. Oh, no, I do double cleanse, but it's got eye makeup. Or that I just look like a drowned rat.
Yeah. No, I do wash my face now instead of the rest, but I do miss just being in bed and being able to just kind of do it while you're watching telly or something.
I have really noticed how much better not using makeup wipes.
Yeah.
How,
oh god, they're so bad
they're really
for you.
Bad.
They're so
really bad.
For you guys.
They just move it round, don't they? Let's be honest.
Smearing my makeup into
but, they're super astringent. Like, I mean, okay, simple or whatever for sort of sensitive skin, but most of them are really
chemical.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. Glad to hear that everybody is making an effort this year. Let's talk about how to say no, whether it's a friend asking to stay at your place or a work colleague wanting an extra helping hand on a project. Sometimes it can be hard to say no, despite how much you want to. So we spoke to a leading lifestyle coach to find out her tips on saying no to more things. Lizzie, good at saying no?
No. It's always been one of my big problems, I think. I've got much better at it over the years. I do think this is a gender question. I think this is something that women have to think about all the time. And I certainly remember when I was first starting out as an assistant at the Sunday Times, whenever it was 10 years ago, and I said yes to everything because I really thought that that was the right way to go about things. And actually, over time, you realise that you're not necessarily appreciated and actually you're a solution to a problem, but you're not necessarily enhancing yourself. Whereas the guy that was doing the same job as me never had any problems with saying no, and it didn't hinder his career progress at all. Now, obviously, don't become obstinate and difficult, and if you're asked to do something by your boss, you need to think about, you know, whether it's a good idea or not. But, you know, I definitely sort of reached a point about 4 or 5 years ago where I realized I had to start saying no. And also socially, like, I was always inclined to say yes, 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 and then you end up disappointing people when you can't juggle everything. It's still something I always think about. It's always a resolution and it never holds.
Interesting. Astrid?
I'm kind of on the same page. When I was younger, I used to say yes to everything, whether it was social or work-wise. And I think, yeah, as you get older, you learn what your worth is, you learn what your place is in your job. And socially, you know, if you don't want to do something, you shouldn't be doing it for other people. Yeah, I think it's probably a gender thing, but also a thing that comes with age.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Heather, what about you?
Basically, completely agree with what you've both just said, yeah. I find it hard to say no. It's something I've definitely been working on over the last couple of years because I am a natural people pleaser.
I also find it hard to say no, but I also sort of have less of a problem with that. Like, if we're talking about just the workplace, I think I would quite rarely say no. I think I would give all my progression to that, to being somebody that people know that they can ask and it will get done, or to step in and those favours come back as well. Like, you scratch somebody's back, they scratch yours. So I find that being a yes man in the workplace, I can't remember a time where I've ever thought, God, this has really hindered this bit of my life so dramatically that it's not worth being that person. And I just think it's an easy way to make yourself indispensable in the workplace by being a bit more of a yes person, perhaps.
I kind of agree with you. Like, it's great to be positive and team player and up for challenges and blah, blah, blah. And actually, when I look at the team, and especially, like, interns that we have here, you always remember the ones that are like, can I do this? Like, say yes to everything. Like, obviously, we treat them very nicely. But, you know, that does make you stand out, I guess, in your career. But I feel like, Charlotte, if you were asked to do something that was
exploitative.
Like, was exploitative, like, you would have the confidence to say no.
Yeah. It's not a not a confidence thing. It's not a, oh shit, I must do it all because otherwise, you know, I'll be looked upon badly. Maybe it does start like that because it is a bit of an intern mentality. But I think, yes, you're right, obviously not exploitative things. Yeah. But I do think there's value in, where possible,
being that person who always says yes. Heather, what about you?
I think in previous jobs I've had, I've definitely been taken advantage of looking back because I have said yes. And even as I kind of progressed in that job and got promotions, I was still often lumped with kind of much lower down tasks just because they knew that I would do it and just get on with it and not question it at all on top of everything else. So I think, yeah, I've definitely got more confident in saying, not even saying no, but just knowing that if something's going to affect everything else that I've got to do normally, then maybe just trying to subtly negotiate and be like, oh, I could do that, but then it means I won't be able to do this, so can we do this?
Yes.
Yeah. Rather than just being like, no, I've not got time.
Yeah. I guess the key to this all, and Carol, your lifestyle coach, touches on this in the piece, is just how to say no without putting noses out of joint, without making people think that you're being disrespectful or you're being lazy, right? And it's about showing that you value your time and you're working out how best you can do your job, right? And if this is the best use of your time. And so I think actually it's worthwhile if you are thinking about whether you're feeling like people ask too much of you or you don't know how to say no, to really think about how you can say no in a way that makes you feel comfortable, that doesn't piss your boss off or your colleagues.
Yes.
And you feel like, you know, you're happier in general.
So true. I think it's about playing your time as opposed to just like, no, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
Because we all know, we've all worked with those people who are just like hardcore no people. And even though they might seemingly get away with more, I don't think you ever really want to be perceived as one of those people. And I think it stands you in good stead in the long term.
No.
Let's talk about it socially. As you say, Lizzie, Carol's advice kind of overall was just saying things but also not justifying them too much. And she specifically says about cancelling social arrangements and getting out of things. She says, don't justify and don't explain. Just clearly, directly and politely say something simple like, I'm unable to do that / make that time, but thank you for asking me.
Well, the key here is, and this is something that I have a bit of a bugbear about, though, I think there's a difference here between saying no at the outset and managing expectations and flaking at the 11th hour. And it's obviously the latter thing, which is what really annoys people, which can cause kind of arguments and fights and make you feel bad about yourself. So it's about really thinking ahead and thinking, can I realistically do this? Versus at 6 p.m. thinking, oh my God, I can't travel 40 minutes on the tube and have this dinner and I have this and that or whatever it is. So I think that's the key, isn't it? Saying no at the right time rather than the wrong time.
I do take that point, but I was organising a hen last year and somebody on the list of invitees replied at the very early stages just saying, sorry, I can't come. And I think if I was the bride, that would have really, really pissed me off because I feel like it's more courteous to make up an excuse even if it's not real. I don't know.
Had the date been decided?
Yes.
Okay.
And the date was decided and then she was just like, I can't come.
It just kind of sounds a bit blunt, doesn't it? It's like, nope, sorry, not doing that. But I guess if you have, as you say, an excuse, it kind of softens the blow a little bit.
She could have said anything.
She could have said anything. Anything.
Yeah. On the plus side, at least she didn't say no at the last minute and everyone else have to suck up the costs.
Oh, but you've got to make it very clear when you're planning a hen that you will not get a refund.
Oh, okay.
You're planning a hen.
Yes, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Make it very clear from the outset that if people drop off, that you're keeping their money because, otherwise it's not fair.
Good to know.
Yeah, good to know. Okay, great. Any other tips for saying no?
No.
Something a bit different now. We recently wrote a piece called The Coolest Lampshade Brands to Transform a Room, because lampshades are having a bit of a moment,
aren't they?
So from brands like Pookie to Matilda Goad, God, check them out on Instagram, even if you're not in the market for some lampshades, because you'll get some serious interiors inspo from there. Lizzie, you said you were just doing up a flat.
I'm running.
Yeah, straight on you. How have you found interior shopping?
So I bought a place with my fiancé last year. We've been in the process of doing it up. I have to just put in a caveat here, which is interiors gives me hives. I find it terrifying. It's so different from shopping, for example, where if you screw it up, you can put it in the back of your wardrobe or give it away or send it back or what have you. Interiors, if you make a mistake, you live in your mistake. So I found the whole process kind of terrifying. Equally, I did find that I loved lampshades, which was not something I expected to do. Pookie is on your list. I love Pookie. And then I just think there are sort of various things that I learned. I mean, lighting, kind of intimidating, but actually it's basic things like making sure they're at different heights. I think that's really important. It's about coziness, right? Especially in England, where for the bulk of the time things are pretty grim on the weather side. And a funny tip that a friend of mine gave me that I thought was completely insane but really helped, this isn't technically lampshades but on the same vibe, is to paint your, you're gonna think I'm insane, paint your light bulbs with very pale pink nail polish.
I've heard that.
Right, it sounds like bananas.
Like ballet slippers.
Exactly, ballet slippers. Exactly, exactly that shade, very pale pink. And it just takes the kind of harsh glow, especially if you're not buying these sort of state-of-the-art, super expensive light bulbs. It gives it a really nice glow and a really nice haze. I told her she was completely bananas. We tested it out, and actually, I agree, it's really, really nice.
Is it not a fire hazard? That would be my only query.
Great question. Wouldn't want to answer that 100%. It seems fine for me. My house hasn't burnt down in the last year, so that's a good sign. And the people that gave me that tip, I really trust. So I'm assuming they've done their homework, but don't look at me.
Interesting.
And how long did it take to do per light bulb?
Not very long, but I'm not a perfectionist. I mean, I'm sure some people who are really kind of would have done it really delicately, maybe done a second layer. I was just doing it as an experiment, largely to prove my friend wrong and tell her that it looked stupid and it really didn't.
God,
really
damn,
maybe,
it worked.
Maybe you have to like decant some ballet slippers and
that's
dunk it.
Thinking,
that might be better.
Yeah. Get like a
quite expensive
little
way to seal your.
Yeah.
It is funny with lampshades, isn't it? Because obviously interior trends have changed so much in the last, maybe in the last like year, 18 months, mm-hmm. because, you know, it was all about like minimalism and Scandi cool maybe this time last year. But I feel like Annabelle's is really to blame for the chintzy trend.
The more is more is more.
The more is more is more, exactly. But I think you have to be a bit wary with your house because you could really go quite hard on that look and then find in a year's time that it looks really tacky
and
dated.
True.
A lot of it, I went to Elvis's house last year. A lot of it reminds me a bit of that. And that's not a look you want to go for, trust me.
I do love this trend. And I think it really plays to people's personalities. When I think of these chintzy fringe kind of 70s, like something your grandma would have, lampshades, I think of like a Pandora Sykes and a Laura Jackson, who I personally love their style, and I think their personal style really shows through in their interiors. So yeah, that's what I love about it.
But would you also be hesitant to make your house hardcore chintz?
Yeah, I wouldn't make it hardcore chintz, but I think some well-chosen pieces.
You know who does that really well? Monique, who did a podcast with us last year. She's got things like a leopard vase, like it looks like a leopard's head. You can get them from Liberty.
Oh, so I know
like,
the ones.
It's like the odd bit of chintz, but on the whole, it's still quite
Also, it
smart.
Really depends on the property you're in. Like, if you're in a new, super modern build,
it's
chintzy
gonna look
is
weird.
Not going to work. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a period property, it can look absolutely amazing.
Definitely.
So yeah, you just really have to play to what you have.
Yeah.
But also, the thing I love about these lampshades is it's kind of open to all. It's not a big investment, whether you're renting or you own your property. Like, it's a nice way to do your place up.
Agreed. Well, if you do want to get involved in the trend, you can check out our piece everywhere from Ocker to Pentreath and Hall is on the list. So it's a pretty comprehensive guide to the lampshades out there now. Lizzie, you recently contributed your little black book to Sherlock's. So I want to grill you on some of the places. So things like best restaurant for interiors, best places for brunch, most romantic spots in London. So if you had to pick one overall favourite from your list, where would it be?
I think we'll go restaurant. And I think I started the little black book with this, and it's Primeur, which is absolutely lovely if you guys haven't been. It's in this old converted 1920s mechanics garage. So it's got big windows and the sort of sliding doors across the front. It's very charming. They sort of have chalkboard tables and they write your name on it and your time. And the food is just delicious. The staff is lovely. It's all candle lit. It's just a really nice place. I stumbled upon it by accident and just love it. The food is lovely. It's not extortionately expensive, which is sort of the prohibitive factor of lots of London restaurants. It's great.
Sounds lovely.
And that's in Stoke Newington, isn't it?
Yeah.
We are often a little South London centric here at Sherlock. So lovely to have a fellow North Londoner here. So you had some picks for North London as well, didn't you?
I did. So I used to love going to Ginger and White, which is a staple of the North London cafe scene. It's an Australian, or maybe it's Kiwi, Australasian
coffee
shop. Absolutely delicious, amazing coffee, lovely vibe. And actually, as a sort of foreign correspondent in my home city, which is slightly strange, sometimes I'll take my laptop there and go and work, and that's the kind of vibe that it is. I also, as another North London favourite, there are some amazing gastro pubs around Hampstead Heath, and something so nice to do in the winter is take the train from wherever you live that's not North London, get up to Hampstead Heath, go for a lovely walk, and then pick up an amazing pub. I love the Wells, which is just right on the fringes of the Heath. The food is delicious.
And you can park outside the Wells.
And you can park, exactly.
Unlike most places in Hampstead.
On the other side of the Heath, although it's currently shut for refurbishment but should open quite soon, is the Bull and Last, which has been raved about by everybody, but it's absolutely delicious as well. I don't know, it's a little like, it's like a trip to the country without leaving the M25.
Completely agree, that is the best. What about abroad? You lived in New York for a number of years.
I did.
You had some recommendations for there as well.
Yeah, I kind of hope that I don't sound hopelessly dated, because you get your favourites, don't you? And then New York is such a fast-paced city that everything moves forward. I actually loved Red Farm, which I mentioned in the little black book, and I saw that they've just opened a London London branch a couple of weeks ago.
I've been to that one. It opened about 6 months ago.
And?
It was good, but I think it's so highly regarded in New York, I think. The expectations were so high, but yeah, it was good food. It was very expensive for what it was, I thought. And the kind of Americana sort of farmhouse vibe didn't quite translate to Covent Garden, but worth a visit.
That's the big question, isn't it? When you have these kind of cult restaurants in other cities and they come to London or they move, does it always work? Like, something else I touched on in the book was that I love dim sum. I'm a complete dim sum fiend. And actually, this weekend, I went to Din Tai Fung.
Oh, how was it?
Guys, bit of a disappointment. Sorry to be such a negative Nelly on everything. But it was really, you know, I was really excited. I've been to the branches in Hong Kong and Taipei.
So we have to say this is a Taiwanese...
Oh, yes, sorry, yeah, I should say. So Din Tai Fung, for background, is sort of the holy grail of dim sum. It's got a Michelin star for its dumplings. It's not insanely expensive in other international branches, and it recently opened just before Christmas a branch in Covent Garden, and it's quickly gained notoriety because the queues are meant to be absolutely bananas, but also it has these soup dumplings that people rave about. So as a dim sum fiend, I decided, right, I have to go, and so I tried to go on the weekend. The queue wasn't actually that bad. I mean, there was quite a long queue, which was what you put your name on. Put my name on, they said it was going to be 45 minutes, which is kind of fine, and we'd prepped, but it was just a bit disappointing.
Oh,
and you know, I think the soup dumplings were amazing. I love the vibe. They have vast armies of chefs behind glass-plated walls creating these little dumplings at rapid-fire pace. But other than that, it was kind of a bit disappointing. So I think, you know, actually you can get plenty of great dim sum in Chinatown, which is 5 minutes down the road for half the price, and save that Din Tai Fung trip. I mean, if you're ever in a place where they do have a branch, go. But actually, when you're in Hong Kong or Taipei, it just felt more authentic. It wasn't lost in translation the way it was in Covent Garden, I think.
That makes sense.
I imagine.
That's a good tip. Let's talk a little about your career as well. Obviously, we mentioned at the top of the podcast that you are European styles correspondent for the New York Times.
I am.
What exactly does that mean?
My job entails a little bit of everything. So I am the only London-based reporter who covers fashion, but it can mean everything from show reviews. So I go to London and Paris and Milan for the shows. It can do a lot of business stuff. I write a lot about hirings and firings, M&A activity. I do a lot of culture stories as well. And I've done a couple of investigations.
Fun. Anything juicy?
Yeah, actually. I did a big investigation last autumn about the use of home workers by luxury brands in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So a home worker is what it sounds like. It's somebody who's employed and works from home. And I found evidence of exploitation of women being paid €1 an hour to work for some of the biggest brands in the business. And that took 5 months. So it was a really time-consuming project. But obviously, those are the things that really feel worthwhile. And sort of just underscore, actually, that fashion is so much more than sort of what begins and ends on the runway, right? There's a whole story behind everything. And that's sort of my job, I guess, to uncover it.
Wow, amazing. And how did you get into this
kind of... How did I get into it? It's interesting how many newspaper fashion journalists say they didn't actually intend to start in fashion. And that was my case. I graduated in 2008. I wanted to be a journalist but didn't know what kind, and so I started interning at the Sunday Times, and everyone just kept saying there's no jobs, don't get your hopes up.
Yeah, 2008,
no jobs.
Bad year.
Oh, so grim. And actually, on the second to last day, the then editor Tiffany Dark of Style said to me, actually, we need a digital assistant, can you start on Monday? And that's the thing, isn't it? It's hard when people ask for advice, because so much of this is luck and being sometimes in the right place at the right time, obviously doing a good job as an intern or as an assistant. And I remember going to my mentor at the paper, who I'd sort of developed, and said, oh, I hadn't really thought about fashion, is that a good idea? And he was like, it is a job. Take your job. And go for it. And so that's what I did. I did about a year at Style, which was great. They were just launching the website, which makes me sound ancient, but that was honestly what was happening. You know, that was my first job, really, to do a lot of social. I remember setting up their Twitter account. And then I'd done a lot of business stuff whilst I'd been interning at the Sunday Times, and Vanessa Friedman, who was then the fashion editor at the FT, rang me and basically said, I know you've got a background in both fashion and business, and I'm looking to hire somebody who can basically be in the newsroom and cover the business side of the fashion and luxury industry. Would you like to come over? And I was a bit like, duh, yes, please. And then she said, oh, and by the way, I'm based in New York. Do you want to come and live in New York? So at 24, I packed up my case and I went off to New York and was at the FT for a couple of years.
Amazing.
Over there.
Oh, it's like the dream.
I know.
Isn't it? What would you say is the best bit about your job?
I think it's a real privilege to be a journalist. I think it can be really difficult at the moment, but to be paid to meet interesting people and talk to them and tell their stories, assess what stories are the right stories to be told and what are not the right stories to be told.
that's an amazing job. My job takes me to amazing places. You know, last year I was in Hong Kong, Saudi Arabia, Ireland. You know, that's amazing. But also journalism is really, really hard work. And I'm sure everybody in this room can testify to the fact that it's not always easy. But it's a trade-off, isn't it?
And I know you said it's hard to give advice when people ask, but if you did have to give one tip to people aspiring journalists or fashion journalists, what would that be?
I've been thinking about this a lot because, again, I'm sure everybody on the podcast in the room here gets this, but I do get a lot of emails asking for advice and I want to be helpful. Something that I sent back to an email last week was, when you're asking me for something, when you're asking me for advice, be specific. Don't just say to me, can you help me or can you guide me? I'm looking to get into the fashion industry. Ask me something like, I really want help pitching. Can you give me 2 or 3 tips on how to pitch a story to an editor? Always add a link to your website. I know that sounds obvious, but the number of people where I say, I've just spent 3 minutes looking for your website via Google, which could have been 3 minutes when I was looking at you and what you do. Also attach your work. I don't really mind, but just be upfront. But yeah, be specific about your requests. And, you know, the chances are I will then be able to get back to you with something constructive and help you on your way.
Amazing. Well, I think that's good advice to give advice to everybody out there. I think that's all we've got time for this week. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining
us. You're welcome. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you enjoyed that, please do rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. We'll see you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.